HBCU students, most of them are from a household where wealth and financial literacy and asset accumulation isn't commonplace conversation. In their mind, from a monetary standpoint, you got a child going off to school and they sign a piece of paper and now they owe somebody $40,000. Yet they've lived no more instance of their life, right? Like, it's day one of school. You already owe somebody money. Day one. This is your first year, right? And so what we ended up doing was finding a way to say, well, let's teach the students to shift their thinking. You don't have to wait till you get out of school to get money. Get rich, assets, invest, whatever.
You are listening to The Millionaire Talk Show with Charles Oglesby.
We're going
to
be millionaires.
And we're interviewing proven millionaires who've built their wealth in real estate, sales, marketing, branding, and other areas by betting on themselves. And now, here's your host, Charles Oglesby. Charles Oglesby.
Millionaire Talk Show, Todd Millionaire, Charles Oglesby, best-selling options course, options community, changed the whole world. You know, we did some really cool things and met some really cool people throughout the pandemic. But the cool thing is like Michelle says, I wasn't dope just in the pandemic. I was dope before the pandemic too. So we still out here dope. And speaking of dope people, we have Terrence Reed, Torrence Reed rather. Do people call you Terrence?
Man, people say it right to my face, right after I tell them my name, like 0.9 seconds later.
Oh, man.
Torrence Reed, HBCU Wall Street.
Thank you.
But before we go into detail, Michelle, this is your second episode. How you feel?
Listen, I'm just grateful to be here. I love it. It's awesome. We're about to have a great time. I'm ready.
Torrence, you're aware of Michelle Welch.
I am.
So for those who don't know, Torrence is a co-founder of HBCU Wall Street. But what's really cool is recently they started their own debit card. So we got to talk about that. They launched their own debit card, which allows them to accept transaction fees and generate revenue that way. And I'm sure also do some really cool things with the university that they're partnering with. And then also he is really big into cybersecurity, and that's been seeing a huge influx. I got hacked to my PayPal. It was bad, man.
They tried to get me last week. Somebody
was the devil.
Somebody tried to spend $1,500 on some headphones.
And so, what the heck are
$1,500? Of course, Wells Fargo warned me because I've never purchased any $1,500.
Okay. So introduce yourself to the peeps, man.
Sure, man. Sure. Thank you for having me, Todd, Michelle, Charles, T. Millie, whoever you are today. Torrence Reed, like Todd said, co-founder of HBCU Wall Street, CEO and founder of CyberShield Security. I'm just a techie, man. I turn people's ideas into clicks on the screen, right? More so not recently, those have been my ideas, right? But technology is what I love. Helping people is what I'm passionate about, and helping them protect their ideas is how I ended up making money, putting those two things together.
So this debit card, let's talk about the debit card.
Yes, sir.
Because I never knew that was a thing. Where'd you guys get the idea to create a debit card?
I've always had the idea, right? I have this odd ability to like foresee the tech future. I mean, it's a couple of things on my Instagram page that if you look at, you can see that I predicted things that was going to happen. Like, almost a year or two before, like Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, their feature sets, things they're gonna do or not let you do. So always had a knack for seeing where technology was gonna go before it got there, right? So I knew that one day the whole neobank thing, that's all the rave now, right? The fact that you don't have to go into a bank, or the fact that you can deposit a check from your phone. Right. Or the fact that you probably can get your money right now in some cases, depending upon what you're using. Right. Like, I saw that was coming maybe 3 or 4 years ago. At that point, HBCU Wall Street probably didn't have a properly defined like go to market strategy. Right. So what HBCU Wall Street is, it's a financial technology platform that helps HBCU students increase their net worth. And HBCU endowments. Long story short, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, we made a GroupMe. The GroupMe grew to about 3,000 or 4,000 people in a couple of months. The Instagram page had about maybe 20 or 30,000 people active 4 months. Now, 5 or 6 years ago, that was a lot, right? And that's probably not that massive now, right? But there was no other entity purposely and consciously in that space just beating people over the head with, look, stop talking about doing things with your money and actually do it, right? And oh yeah, by the way, here's how you can do it, right? So in that essence, if you're gonna help somebody with their money, the first place to start is their monthly cash flow. And so they'll go back one before that, their monthly cash flow is connected to their debit card, mm-hmm. because that's the gateway into really assisting somebody analyze and, their wealth and apply steps and the millions of courses you have. Right. Like you literally first have to start with the fundamental thought, which is so crazy to me how fleeting this thought is from so many people. You probably want to keep more in than is going out.
Right.
Right. So the debit card for us is just the evolution of me, who we
makes
are,
perfect what, sense to me.
What we doing. Right. Like, yeah, we started talking, check your credit and print your credit report out, right? Like that was 6 years ago. There's a lot of people doing that, but we did it 6 years ago.
So is this like your own bank?
So it's connected to an actual FDIC insured bank, but ultimately that's what we're going for. We're going to be, and I'm saying it out loud on camera. Yes, it's being recorded. We're going to be the HBCU USAA ultimately, right? Think about all of their products and services and
that's dope.
Et cetera, right?
That's and really again, awesome.
Your entry point into that was my debit account. Now I have car insurance. I have some of my kids' savings accounts. I have other products with USAA because I had a debit card. Period.
So how do you even start this whole process? How do you start the process of going debit card?
It's all APIs, man. That's your world is instantaneous. Every What's activity API? You take. So automated programming interface or application programming interface. Basically how when you go to Mint, you sign in with Facebook at that moment.
That's actually really interesting. I've like to think of doing a whole debit, like getting a debit card and like doing like, do you remember the Rush cards and like
the car with that?
The baby fat came out with one. So that's, I think that's a cool concept, but yeah. Is it sustainable? Because when you think about, you know, even the Kardashians, they even had a business where they started with debit cards. So it just kind of makes you think like, is that a sustainable place to get into, a space to get into?
Yeah. I think it's a good question to ask him.
I think he signed off. He might be jumping back in.
It's funny. The tech people always have like the worst connections. Like, how many programs are you running, fam?
Let's force close some of them before we get started. I was I'm on his Instagram now and I'm just looking at some of the things that he posts, and he's really in this cyber space. That's really dope.
Dang. Bobby Wagner's going to the Rams, not the Chargers.
Did you get season tickets?
Mm-hmm. I don't have Rams season tickets, I have Charger season tickets. I've considered getting some Rams season tickets, though, because I go to enough of their games.
To where it's like.
Yeah, but my Charger season tickets are like on the bowl, like the 100 level. And my strategy is to get Rams season tickets on the 200 level because they're actually really good seats. Like it's a little bit higher, but you can actually see the game. Like where I am, you're close to the game. When you're higher, you see you have like a
vantage.
Yeah. So I just need to pull the trigger. I have a direct connection to my Charger rep, but low key, the Charger rep can probably sell Rams tickets too, or he knows a Rams guy.
That you can kind of funnel it.
Yeah, so I need to go through him because I want to do it. But then it's like, I want to get Clippers season tickets. Yeah, we can hear you.
You said Clippers?
Yeah, Clippers season tickets.
Basketball?
Yeah, but the problem is the Clippers suck right now.
So like, do you want to make that investment? I mean, you could always sell the tickets, right? For someone else to go.
Yeah. And they make it really easy to sell tickets too. I wanted to actually make a course on like buying and selling tickets and like the arbitrage behind that and looking at the different prices, because there's certain games where like the money that you can make to sell a ticket, like if you have a whole pair, you can make like half the season back just off of like one or two games.
I think that you should make a course about that and also add in there like how to spot if it's a bad deal. There's another course.
All right. Season ticket hacking. Yeah, we're back, man. We're trying to find out about
man, listen, they know I was about to share some gems with the world, man. They might have just tried to hack into my router in my house.
Oh, no.
They're doing construction in my neighborhood. I think that somebody just hit some with power stuff. So my router had went out, honestly. So you was asking what's an API? API is how two different systems talk to each other. Mm. It's how you can use Mint to use your login with Facebook.
That's dope. Right? So I never knew what that was. I just knew I liked it.
Mint is no different. It's the reason why when you swipe your card, you get a notification almost within a millisecond, right? So I got on the internet, right? I was like, this really what happened. So I participated in a venture capital fellowship, right? And at the end, you had to do a project. So part of our project is what we're actually doing at HBCU Wall Street, which is teaching college students how to maneuver through entrepreneurship, ultimately up the ladder to venture capital, right? Teach them about money, finances, investing, et cetera, while helping them building businesses. So I presented that and like everybody was like, yo, you need a banking partner. So I tried to find a banking partner, right? Banking as an infrastructure. Basically, you need a Bank of America to support you, to get behind you, right? Because you already got the front facing part. I got the customers and I got the engagement and we got the TV show and the media and stuff, right? Like you need an actual FDIC insured bank on the back end. Cause I don't care how many likes and followers you got, like is your shit legit, right? So I couldn't find one. And I was like, well, you know what? Let me stop looking for somebody to help me with issuing debit cards and just find a way that my website can issue its own debit cards. Mm-hmm. I was going to use Stripe. But Stripe didn't provide me the management and administration that I need. Stripe was for if I needed to get my HBCU Wall Street team debit cards, right? So I went on the internet. I remember it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. I Google. I'm real good at searching. A lot of people don't know your results. It's way different if you type in different keywords. So I found some software. Again, I'm a builder. I found some software. I signed up. I found a little code snippet that let you test how it would look on your site, et cetera. Within an hour, I had decided, like, okay, we're going with these debit cards. This is what we're going to use, right? So then I just pay a developer to finish what I had started. And you just go back and forth, right? Hey, this is how I want my signup screen to look. This is how I want my registration page to look.
So are these digital debit cards or physical debit cards?
Both. You can in the workflow, it says, do you want a digital? You got to build what people are already used to, right? People are already used to the flow of you can get a virtual card or do you want a physical card to come to, right?
So how is this different? Man. How is this different from like Rush Card?
Oh, that's funny. That's only funny because I know the stigma that was associated with that. And sometimes stigmas just are attached to things that don't pan out. The stigma might not have been true, right?
But you know, Rush Card was successful. I think people just didn't like that, like it was paired with another company because they thought it was like a black bank.
Well, there wasn't enough education back then about all the alternatives to chasing that bag or wealth creation. Or
I think he's everything, right about that. Yeah.
Everything isn't walk in the bank and apply for some money, right?
Yeah. Like,
yeah. So,
and also the connotation behind it. Like when you think about Rush Card, honestly, I think about prepaid, and prepaid seems to have like a weird chokehold on people. Like if it's prepaid, that means it's not like not that it's not legit, but it's not credible. Like you don't want to pay with your prepaid card. You don't like, you know what I'm saying? So the Rush Card, and then you have Russell Simmons pushing it. It's like, what is this? You know,
that made it worse.
The right? Lack of education, because you're like, you have this man that is in the music space coming in and telling me that I should put my money with him on this prepaid card that has no branches, that has no way for me to walk in and say, give me my money. It's all kind of virtual. You know, back then there was no education. So people are like, no, I don't trust that. So what is like, what makes you different in the sense?
Well, the way we went about it, one, and the way we go about it, two, right? So I built a community first, right? We had 40, 50,000 people before we even thought about how we're going to monetize it. Like I purposely set out to let people tell me what they wanted. Like one of the rules of the group was when you join the group, if you tried to sell anyone anything, you got kicked out immediately, right? You got to build a community first. And so what the banks do is give you products, and then at the bottom of their site in some little small corner say, hey, we got a community. We got these resources for you. It's not community driven first, right? So yeah. I let my people tell me what they want. That was first. The other thing was I've selflessly done it, right? Like I can build anything, and I could have a million times over built something that has made me rich, right? Like we're building things that help people help themselves. Because ultimately, if you come on our platform, you know anything about money, you don't know anything about money. By the time you get value out of it, you're probably only way to thinking about like, is your money in tax deferred accounts? What kind of buckets you got your money in? Like that's a big difference, right? So it's the motivation behind it, right? Like I don't care what anybody say. If your motivation is pure, you're going to go first. It might take you longer to get wealthier, but you'll probably go further than those who have like just thinking about themselves.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So
I agree. That's what I build everything on. I think it was cool as you went back to the I mean, you've never really left the HBCU model. Like that's where you guys stay, which I think is just a really cool place to be. And it's proven to be a pretty lucrative place to be. I mean, recently we saw Ralph Lauren rolling out his HBCU. I think he calls it like a Black Ivy League collection or something like that.
Right.
As a HBCU person, what was your take on that?
My very first take was, man, we can't have none. That's always my
because that's always the price tag. That was just
that's always my take.
That's crazy.
Well, we're the creators of everything. Right, like nothing in this world moves without us. Even if you go way, way back, if you ain't doing nothing, you don't have any necessity to find a better method of doing it. Like,
I just think it's really dope when Black creatives want to push the culture and like expose us to new things. You know, like I don't think I would have ever learned about cybersecurity if I didn't meet Torrance, because I met him in the mastermind. So like, and then he had talked about it or whatever. So I would have never known the importance of it. I mean, my stuff gets hacked like a lot, like the stuff. I get a lot of texts because I work now heavily with Navy Federal and Truist, and I'm always getting texts like, did you make this transaction? Did you do this? And I'm like,
it's frustrating.
It like, is.
That's one of the things.
You know how many people don't have those transactions turned on, right? To your point, you know how many people don't have those notifications turned on? At the beginning of the call, I was telling you, somebody literally tried to buy some $1,500 headphones. And because every financial application that I have in my life, I have two-factor and I have every single notification that they have turned on. Because emails are free. Inboxes are free. Rules and filters are free. Like anything that your life is attached to, you should probably have all the notifications on. Right? Like if X amount of money is spent on any given day and is, if it's more than $1,000 on my credit cards, we back. Where we at?
Bruh.
What are you guys?
This is a struggle, man.
You know, we like, or you're muted.
It's a power issue going on in my neighborhood, bro. They're building houses around me. I mean, it's economic activity happening. What you want me to do?
And the cool thing is it's increasing your property values.
Yes, there's a hospital coming up. We got some more houses.
Shout out to
ownership. No, literally, they're messing with the power thing in my neighborhood. So my router keep popping. But I got my iPad with cellular. So if it go out, I'll do that. You was asking me about the Ralph Lauren thing.
Yeah.
Right. So two things, the Ralph Lauren thing, and then she said something about her bank notifications.
But real quick, also, there was a situation. I don't know if this is relevant, but because it is relevant. So there was that brand, the HBCU, the university, the one that sells all of the HBU college stuff. They are actually under fire right now because they are selling the brand, you know, Howard and all these other schools, but they're not actually sending out the product. So they have people that are like banning against them, kind of like the Dana Chanel situation. People have created, you know, a lot of buzz on social media around people profiting, our own people profiting off of the HBCU college name and supporting that, you know, that method and everything, right, the ideology, but they're not following through with the community. And it's like, you know,
right,
that's a big thing, you know, in our community. So it's just like, you seem to be taking the narrative a whole different direction and holding right. yourself accountable and providing the resources that are needed. So I think that's really dope.
I didn't hear, but yeah. you're talking about Support Black College.
Is that what it is? Yeah, I mean, they sell the sweatshirts, they sell everything. There was a, maybe like 3 to 4 weeks ago, there was a post on the Shade, you know, sorry to bring this part in, but there was a post on the Shade Room and it was about a customer had like tweeted, you know, I ordered my stuff maybe 3 months ago and you guys are not responding. You're still going on live. You're still accepting orders. And then another person was like, well, me too. And then, you know, it just started the movement of everyone kind of letting people know their issue. And then I had a friend that on her story, she posted something similar. And I was like, yo, I've seen this too much to not kind of look at it and see it for what it is. And so I looked into it and it was, yeah, there was over, I think, like 200 complaints about customers not receiving their merchandise, about them, you know, dragging their feet. You know, one big thing is that a lot of people are still blaming the pandemic and people are like, listen, we've been in this for 2 years now. If you couldn't figure out how to properly position yourself to have either better customer service, because you know that shipping is going to take forever, or offer other options, but just not answering and not providing the product is just not a solution anymore. And that's something that they were doing. So I don't even see how
a company could do that nowadays, right? Like, that was something that we stood on, like, even in the early days. I mean, not so much now because we just scaled and we have other divisions and things that came out of it. But in the early days, like, we replied to everyone abruptly. Like, we treated the 17,000 follower was treated just like the seventh follower, right? Like, we replied to them, we replied to their emails. Because for me, it was, if somebody's going to take their time to reply to you and comment on your on what you're doing, I mean, and it's a thoughtful meaning, it provides value, et cetera, right? Then you probably should take your time and reply back, right?
I mean, you are we're a business. And I think that customer service has the Black community in a chokehold, because I just don't understand, you know, the fact is that if you're providing a service, people are paying for it. You just expect a certain level of, like, of business acumen. You expect a certain level of responsiveness.
It's an easy way to look at it. Just be a good person, right? Like, just be a good person. And that means be communicative, be prompt, reply, tell the truth, send good numbers over, everything. Like, if you just be a good person, like, good business just kind of flows out of that. Right.
And you're going to apply that to the debit card, right? Like, because, you know,
obviously, of course,
getting people
of course.
To trust into that, that's their money.
Everything I built has always been about transparency, right? Like, anything I've ever built has always had, like, dashboards and systems so people can see, like, how many users we got, how much money they're making. Like, if we say we donate your money, here's a Google Drive with all of the 501c3 receipts that we sent out. Right. Like, I don't play about that in business. So then the necessity for people to have warmth and feel secure is just there by default. Right. Because that's just how I operate, because I'm just organized. And so I need that. So. Yeah. And if somebody has to see it, of course you can see it. You can't build out here in today's world trying to hide things. I mean, if nobody hasn't told you that, it's person you're talking to. Like, he shares everything, he shows you everything. Of course, it's a proprietary thing. It's not going to go about your business, or it wouldn't be a business. It'd just be a community group project, right? But you got to share. We live in a world where everyone can know what you're doing right now at any given moment, no matter what you're at on any given day. You can't hide things. You can't do it. So don't even approach it in that manner, right? You're not. Right? You're not. Women is like super detectives out here too. Right? So
are you? I don't mean to cut you off, but are you using your knowledge base that you have in, like, cybersecurity to apply that to the debit card, to making sure, like, you know, the issue that we spoke about when you first came back was, like, people that, you know, fraud is at an all-time high right now. People want to make money the easy way. So it's like, how with us putting our money into your debit card system and utilizing that, you know, how are we protected? You know, how is our money protected? I know you said that you're backed by the FDIC with a bank. So, I mean, right. That's amazing to be able to get a product with, you know, that backing. But how, as a consumer on the, like, top layer, how are we protected at that point?
So, well, like you said, one, I have a background in cybersecurity, right? Like, as a full-time entrepreneur, it's what pays my bills, right? Like, my cybersecurity started. So in anything I'm building, I'm just probably going to go a little deeper. My specialty is preventative threat maintenance, right? Okay. Not post, not you're hacked. I mean, granted, I can help you recover if you have a problem, right? Like, but my specialty is let's make sure you are good if it happens. Well, when it happens, not if it happens. And so to answer your question, you can't do it any differently than anyone else. I'll say that and I'll explain it, right? Technology is technology. Bank of America uses the same technology that the Cash App uses, right? Deutsche Bank, which is one of the largest banks in the world, they're using the same technology that Stripe is using, right? My startup that's issuing debit cards is using the same technology Robinhood, that should issue a card, right? Now, the difference is how you're going to communicate to people that you're protecting their data. Are you going to be forthcoming and upright when things happen? Are you going to provide them the resources to protect it? Or are you going to have integrity and ethics in communicating what's going on? You'd be surprised sometimes how many businesses out here get hacked and you don't know until like 120 days later, right? Right. Like, then people are reading the press release and it's like, this business was hacked in February. And you're like, well, man, it's August. Hold up. Why am I just finding out?
That's the weirdest thing.
Right. And so they probably legally at some point didn't have to tell you the day it happened. It's probably why they can do that. But for me, my ethics trumps legality. I'm going to let you know immediately because your life is connected to my application, right?
I mean, money makes the world go round. So definitely.
Well, not even just that. Your debit card and your financial accounts connected to everything. They're connected to your wealth. They're connected to your startup. They pay your rent. They pay for schooling and pay for leisure and pay for your investments. And most people don't have a different subset of passwords. Most people don't have a password for the things for them and their spouse or partner, a password for things for their children, password for their financial accounts. A password, I have all these different passwords and they're all in my head.
Right? Sure.
Like none of them are the same. Because if I hack into your phone because Gmail got hacked last weekend and you're using the same password to pay your card note,
that's how most people get their stuff taken over is because you get into their Instagram, you now can get into their Cash App, you can get into their Apple Pay, you can get into all their other things. So that makes a lot of sense. And that's why I think the two-factor authorization is super dope. Do you guys have that? Or do you guys on the debit card, do you offer those text messages? Like, hey, if it seems like it's fraudulent or, you know, like how do you guys even determine what seems maybe fraudulent? Like, how do you guys figure that out?
So that's called
an artificial intelligence system.
That is AI. It's called data monitoring, right? What you can do and what most people don't realize is a snapshot of who you are and how you behave in the digital landscape is on several servers somewhere. That's how technical systems are able to, man, how do they know that I like that so quickly? Or wow, how did I get that email so fast? That's because there's an artificially intelligent duplicate of your behaviors sitting in multiple places, right? And so to your point, to what I said earlier, Wells Fargo knew that there was no way in hell that I had ordered some $1,500 headphones. Right. Mm-hmm. Like the balance on the card is only like $5,000. I've never ordered anything from a media entity on that card. And I've never purchased anything over $1,000 on a Monday morning. Like they systems know.
Oh,
all
my
of that.
God. So it's all like.
It literally said this is $1,500 purchase on this card. And we never uses 30% of the card at one point in time in this zip code to buy this type of thing. And then I get an email that says you get the little weird email with the Y and N.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's nobody check. No one's checking that. That's a system doing that, right? So to answer your question, you have to start with some level of preventative threat notifications, right? Like, will we be where Wells Fargo is at on day one? Probably not, right? But you do have to be able to analyze people's transactions and say, you can start simple, right? Like it's college student based card. If I got a transaction for $10,000, for $1,000, right? Like most college students probably not making a $1,000 transaction. I'll probably set my system to function within the limits of what my research tells me students spend on a regular basis and the places they spend in.
Yo, it's the Options Trading Workshop, presented by Tide Capital. Learn the fundamentals and advanced trading strategies that allow us the chance to earn $20,000 in side money in 1 year while working a job and running multiple businesses. That's right. Learn the what, the where, and the how of options trading in this exclusive webinar. To find out more details, hit us up on the link in the bio, on Instagram at PartnerWithMillie, or on Instagram at Todd.Capital, or just head over to Gumroad.com/Todd Capital.
Right. And you can measure that in one few different ways. What does the research tell you? What do the students at that school like? What's their socioeconomic status? If you were at a school in a poor rural area, there's probably not a student buying $200 Jordans on a Monday morning, right? So technology can do all of that, right? Technology can do all of that.
So that's interesting.
I know. That's like
really y'all thinking about your lives, huh? You don't even know what to ask me next.
I'm curious. How are you getting the students excited about this, and how are you connecting with the schools?
So everything I ever built is for someone to help themselves, right? In this case, there's a direct line, a direct correlation to financial literacy and fiscal understanding rates and the endowment size of the HBCU, right? If the students leaving from their one are about to end up in a place where they're owing a lot of money and they don't understand money, which just is bad for everyone, but good for all the people who sit in the middle of them not owing money, chances that they're going to donate back to the school become lower and lower. Mm. Right. So what we're doing is touching on almost like the elephant in the room of the discussion that's not being had. Right. It's like generationally, HBCU students, most of them are from a household where wealth and financial literacy and asset accumulation isn't commonplace conversation. So you got in their mind from a monetary standpoint, you got a child going off to school and they sign a piece of paper and now they owe somebody $40,000. Yet they've lived no more instance of their life, right? Like it's day one of school. You already owe somebody money. Day one. This is your first year, right? And so what we ended up doing was finding a way to say, well, let's teach the students to shift their thinking. You don't have to wait till you get out of school to get money, get rich, assets, invest, whatever. However you want to do it, whatever you want to call it, whatever phrase or slang y'all use. You don't have to wait till you get out of school to get money. That can be property, that can be coins, that could be Turo cars, whatever, right? And so you can take that money and generate more money at the time and space in your life where you have the least financial responsibility. Most college students probably got like 6 or 7 real bills. It's nothing but testers and MVP people walking around you every day. Like take those two things, add them to the idea that, you know what? I probably can be generating cash when I get out of here. Like that, the age old thought of now I'm 30. Let me get my credit together. Let me get a house. Let me try to start doing my little white picket fence dance. Like why you got to wait till you're 30 to do that?
Exactly. So that's really dope what you're doing for the culture in that aspect. But I think like one thing that I'm just sitting on, you know, is I'm a very big person of like productivity and profits. I'm always thinking of those two things that they correlate. So you're doing all of this work. You're putting in a lot of sweat equity to really, you know, educate the masses and get things out there. But like, how do you capitalize off of having your own debit card? Is it with the fees? Like, how does that work for you guys on your end to make money? I know we're all about the culture, but like we gotta get some coins.
No, well, glad you said that. That's a misconception in the culture, right? Like you can do well while doing good. Like you can help people and be fly at the same time, or getting bread or getting a bag or whatever you call it.
Impacting voices.
I've been philanthropic my whole existence, but I've also been getting money my whole existence. Right. But no, to your point, two people make money in this instance. Because the idea is you ultimately show the students through their daily financial activities at some point in their transaction and checkout flow that they can donate money to the school's endowment, right? So the school is going to ultimately get money. Just think Acorns, right? But with a little twist with the campus vendors and campus activities, right? Then the other side is we get half of the interchange fees from every swipe, right? Yeah, the more people that use the card, the more money that the school could generate and the more money that we could generate to keep on doing what we're doing.
Just playing devil's advocate here. So if there's going to be fees for every swipe, you know, just as a consumer, I'm frugal. I don't care how much money I make. I'm always going to worry about fees. I'm always going to worry about those little things, because those things add up, especially when you're in a time period in college where every dollar, every cent counts. So what is going to be maybe your pivot or rebuttal when someone's like, well, I don't want to pay fees when I can go with Chase and they only charge me when I overdraft and they don't charge me per transaction. So how do we shift the mindset to that this may be a better option for them?
Well, so there's no account fees. There aren't any card fees or usage fees, right? So as a consumer, you don't pay interchange fees, right? So the way interchange fees work is, let's just say you have a gas station, uh-huh. Then you have Visa, right? When you swiped your card at the gas station, it didn't go directly from that kiosk to Visa. There's a processor in the middle, right? Like there's other players in the system, right? And so those people in the middle take their fee. It's literally why when you go to a gas station, they say, I need you to spend at least $5, because they want you to spend above a threshold so that they're not getting beaten by the fee, right? Gotcha. So end users won't see any aesthetic or monetary difference in how they use a debit card, right?
Yeah, it's a fee that you're already paying. You're paying with your current debit card. You're paying with your current credit card. Anytime you swipe it with the Visa logo, you're getting charged. And that was why there's people who they make money just selling credit card processing. This is before like they had like Stripe and Square and all that stuff. Yeah, you can literally call somebody up and say, hey, like, I want to be your credit card processor. And then you ship them the terminal, you get them approved because they weren't taking credit cards. They're going to increase their revenue in their business because more people are going to use it. And then you're going to make your 1%, 2%. It's a very small free fee, but it's there. So it's interesting.
That reminds me of
you got to think about 1% times 875 million transactions around the world every minute, every day.
Right. It's big business.
Big thinking. That's dope. I mean, that's to create a system like this for what you're doing it for. That's iconic. I think that's so dope. And especially that it's sustainable and it kind of keeps going and builds up to be its own bank. That is definitely goals. Okay.
I think another thing that's really cool is that, again, they're already paying the fees anyway, so they're just paying it to some random company. So why not pay it to a Black-owned company? You know, mm-hmm. A company that's going to donate back to the school, a company that's going to have a vested interest in the kid's success and not just it is what it is with them, wash their hands if they spend all their money. It's like, bro, like we're tracking the data. You're spending too much money at the strip club, fam. Like you need to get up out the strip club. You need to stop.
But that's funny you say that, because one of the first things we're going to do is track how they're spending money on food. Because
yes,
to get somebody to change their activity, you got to change their thinking, because behavior will follow, right? So that's probably, you know, statistically what you spend the most money on. It's what everybody spends the most money on, food. And it's probably what I also can get you to change your behavior to the quickest if I get you to change your thinking, right? So we're going to work within and analyze the food spend behavior inside of our app and the data and the analytics. I mean, just think about a nutshell, right? It's like, for example, right? Like a student may, when I went to North Carolina NT, we had Chick-fil-A on campus, right? I probably went to it 3 or 4 times a day. I still go to Chick-fil-A 3 or 4 times a week now.
What? But,
at least twice. I mean, I wish they would go public. Every time I pull up, I'm like, Jesus.
Hold on, it's crazy. I think there's crack in the chicken, man.
Man, listen.
4 times a day?
Not 4 times. It was probably twice.
That's still a lot.
But Chick-fil-A is legit the only fast food restaurant I legit get in my car from my house and leave and go to. Everything else, I got to be out and about to stop at it. Right? No, but
that's because you guys don't have In-N-Out. If you had In-N-Out, you feel
man, like, I don't even
add In-N-Out to the list.
That's going
to
be another dog.
You don't like In-N-Out?
I mean, I don't think it's all the hurrah and hoopla that you West Coast people say it is.
We're just going to put it there.
You didn't.
I did.
I've never had In-N-Out. So hopefully in June when I come to Cali, Charles, you can show me all
we're gonna
the places.
We're going to get some In-N-Out.
You know, I keep it funky. Yeah. Nah, to answer, you know, part of your question, I think that, like you said, they would go to Chick-fil-A and I would be able to tell you, like, look, you're going to Chick-fil-A this many times a week. Cut it down by one. Here's how much money you would be able to save. And then that often starts the thinking of changing the behavior of the 85% of students that we've stood in front of. And I asked them, do you know what cash flow is? Mm. Man, I'm like, I just said it kind of literally, like, dude,
kind of so, literally. Was it clear and concise?
I mean, cash flow, you know,
but how much more literal can you get?
Man, you would be surprised how many people in our community that are considered either low income or unbanked or what have you don't understand that simple thought that I need to figure out. The students, we just try to get them to zero each month because most of them are in the negative. Most of them don't understand that you negative $80 a month. Right? At the end of the month, if you calling grandma or you hitting church up or you pinging your cousin for $40, right? Like, you're not producing enough money to live each month. You're in the red. They don't get that. So the first thing we try to get them to do is to get that and get to zero. Get to $0 cash flow each month. That means you make enough money to live, right? Then, boom, your mindset has changed. You're now thinking about how much is coming in, going out, my behaviors, et cetera, et cetera. Now I can introduce you to, okay, well, let's figure out a way since you're 18 and you don't have a real life yet because you don't have any bills, you don't got anybody responsible for you to be responsible for. Let's figure out how you can make $30 a month, whatever. I don't know. What are you good at? What group are you in, right? Have you studied options? I don't know, whatever. Like, let's now figure out how you make some money, not just be a red line item somewhere on somebody else's budget.
Okay.
You know what's
I'm sorry, I'm just so intrigued now.
What's interesting about that is it sounds a little bit like financial coaching. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting is in this individualistic culture that we live in, people think that having a coach makes you less than human. Like, it makes you not enough. But it's like having somebody on you, giving you suggestions, actually can ensure that you're successful.
Accountability.
In a lot of instances, your parents are supposed to serve as that financial coach. Maybe mm-hmm. you just don't want to listen to your parents because you've grown. But I'm learning that we really need help. Everybody needs help. And we're probably struggling because we're not getting help. But it doesn't always have to be in the form of like a check. Sometimes it could just be in the form of a check up. Somebody checking in on what you're doing, saying, no, don't do that. Tweak this way. Boom, boom, boom. And now you're taking strides in the right direction. So it's just interesting to hear that you say that, because I've been having this conversation. I had the conversation yesterday with the business coach. Michelle's a business coach, a cleaning coach. And I would argue, Michelle, that the people that you coach get it way faster than those who don't have access to coaching. Right? Yeah. So it's like, you can expedite the process.
It's why if you're part of my circle, community, text group, WhatsApp group, email list, whatever, anything that I've done, why should you have to endure the same journey to do it? I should be able to cut time in half for you. Right? Like, I'm just naturally going to make it easier for you, right? Like, that's what I should do. I did it. I went through it, right? And so that's one of the things that we're doing for the HBCU students, is helping them understand the connection between fiscal understanding and wealth and community. And, oh yeah, by the way, let's see the numbers going up while we're doing all this talking, right? Like also, Todd, to your point, I think part of that is, some of that is psychologically rooted and some of that is the grind, the whole idea of help, right? Because I've been an entrepreneur for, when do you count for me you became an entrepreneur? I don't know. I've been an entrepreneur for 10 years, I guess, whatever. I only realized in the last couple of years that, man, I can't do X thing. No, I can read about X thing. I can sign into it, but I can't do it. I should probably reach out to an expert. And that doesn't mean that I'm not a genius because I don't know last in, last out accounting, right? Like, I just need to go ahead and find an expert and reach out to them and do that. And getting to a point where you realize I need to welcome help. What I've done is as far as my brain and my capabilities and my 10 fingers can take it. And
that is such a key.
What?
That is a key. At this point in my entrepreneurial journey, I know what I don't need to be doing.
Yes. Yeah.
But early, I was trying to wear a bunch of hats. I was trying to do accounting and bookkeeping. I was trying to create financial statements. I was trying to create the contracts. I was trying to be the property manager. I was trying to be the project manager. Now, I feel like in the beginning of a business, you can kind of feel like if you can't do it all, maybe like you're less than an entrepreneur. Like, yeah, like,
that's not the case. That is not the case at all. As a productivity guru, like, I think the biggest thing is understanding delegation and task priority before you can really excel, in my personal opinion, and from what I've seen through my journey, before you can excel at operating multiple streams, operating multiple businesses, you have to operate yourself and you have to govern yourself accordingly. Mm-hmm. And that means understanding your value as a business, as a person, that under your boundaries for your clients and for yourself and what work you want to take in. Like, a lot of people skip so many steps of building the foundation because it doesn't look fun or it doesn't look right. And we miss so many areas of opportunity for ourselves to grow. Like, people don't realize that by you not managing yourself properly, your business properly, the amount of opportunities or money you're leaving on the table because you're procrastinating, you're lazy, you don't know what a priority is. You're over here trying to be the accountant when you should really just delegate that out to somebody that actually does that versus, well, let me learn QuickBooks. No, why don't you learn how to make more money and focus your time, hire someone to do your QuickBooks, get a bookkeeper, you know, and, you know, see how you can make it work. A lot of people also don't tap into the power of the barter system, you know, a fair energy exchange. There's a lot of things that you can offer somebody and they can offer you. And I mean, I, as a business owner, I love a good barter. I love being able to offer somebody my support and services in exchange for something that I'll find valuable. And I just think, you know, the big thing in our community is the help. It's okay to ask for help. And I've been doing this for May will be 5 years, full-time entrepreneur, full-time business owner. And even to this day, the hardest part for me is asking for help, because I had the mentality since I had to start by myself. It was like, you did this, you grew it off your back, you did it on your own. Every time I bring somebody in, they don't understand the vision. But it's not necessarily that people don't understand the vision, it's that you may not be articulating it correctly. You yourself are so involved in so many different things that you can't even tell a VA, you can't even tell an assistant what you need done throughout the day, because you don't know at which level of priority it is. You don't really know what's going on in the business in itself because you're so busy working, trying to get clients, trying to get money. So it's like, we take so much of a backseat to the process. And I'm gonna say this again, because I always say this, is you cannot grow a concept of a business. You can only grow and scale systems. So it's so important to learn delegation and to know what you should handle and what you shouldn't handle. I, for one, will not handle cybersecurity. I don't know what that is. I don't want to know what that is.
I got you. Okay.
There's people like you where I'm like, listen, send me the invoice. This is what you're going to do. Perfect. Great. Now I don't have to worry about that. And I think that is a big thing that we need to come to the aha moments, because when I first started, I wanted to be the owner of everything. I wanted to do everything. Now you can, I will pay whatever it is so that I don't have to stress out. Because when you go through your journey in entrepreneurship, you learn it's not about doing the most. It's about doing the least, getting the best results, and being able to live life on your terms.
Well, two things you said made me think about a couple of things. One of them is you got to think about what you're really building. Are you building some cool shit out here so you can put it on the ground and get a little bags? Or are you building something that you're going to put in the trust one day and people get checks from when you don't exist?
Exactly.
Because that goes to my second part, is part of managing yourself is the ugly things.
Todd Consulting presents the Vending Machine Business Webinar. You can only have one job, but you can have as many vending machines as you want. This is your chance to see how we do business and how you can start your very own vending machine business. Avoid the mistakes we made and start winning. You'll be shown how we find, negotiate, buy, and manage our vending machine business, generating thousands per month, and how it has unlimited scale. To find out more details, hit us up on the link in the bio, on Instagram at PartnerWithMillie, or on Instagram at Todd.Capital, or just head over to Gumroad.com/Todd Capital.
The ugly things is the repetitive shit nobody sees. You will never catch me getting ready. I'm always ready because I'm always doing the ugly shit when nobody's looking, right? And that's the making the SOPs. That's the making the email templates. That's the setting up the automated workflows. That's the let me get this together so that when I bring on this person, I don't have to get it together, right? So that's the other side
system
of managing
that's
yourself.
That foundation,
yeah. Those are the ugly aha moments.
For right? me, you know, like the hard part about setting up systems is like feeling like I'm losing my creativity or feeling like I'm losing my ability to be fluid and go like day by day. But I think the opposite is true. I think you actually gain more control and more power when you don't have to think about the stupid things. Mm-hmm. When you have organized and structured, right? So you're not thinking about stuff that shouldn't be taking up brain energy because you're trying to be creative and flow with the day.
It's Let me tell you something. I was about to just say, and you said it. Your brain can only think one thing at a time. And that for me was the first part of getting to where I'm at now versus where I was at 10 years ago. The moment I would say, man, I don't know what I'm gonna do about X, I would be like, nope. All right, look, figure out how you're gonna reply to the old buddy that's in your inbox, because that's a bag. You just was about to think about something negative. And then the moment people would say, like my wife would come in here and say, you know, hey, I want this, X, Y, Z, can we buy this? Can we sign up for this? At that moment, I thought, the first thought usually would have been, damn, that's gonna cost more. I need to cut out a bill, or I need to reduce something. Now my very first thought is, well, let's generate more cash.
Yeah.
I don't even know how, but I just gotta generate more cash. I'll figure it out later.
I was in my backyard.
Yeah,
I was in my backyard and I was looking at our shrubs and our bushes. And now that it's starting to turn spring, they're growing again. So I gotta trim them soon. And I paid somebody like $100 to do it a few months ago. And I was like, you know what? I could just go to Home Depot and get the little trimmers and everything. And I was like, yeah, I could do that. And I was like, nah, I'm not doing that shit.
It's gonna take 3 hours. How much do you value your time per hour? Like, literally.
I was like, I'm not doing that.
It ain't worth it. It's not.
You gotta,
it's,
like,
it's literally not monetary worth it. Man. But most entrepreneurs would be like, I'm an entrepreneur. I can read. I can look at YouTube. I can do this shit.
So, like, systems are really just like getting dumb stuff off your desk.
Yeah.
Like, things that should not be taking up time. Let's create things that should not be taking up time that should be getting done. And that could even be the customer service stuff that we're talking about earlier. Customer service can and should be systematized.
Yeah, because that's how, when you look at all the companies that get backfire for things that they're not doing, for not answering, it's normally 9 times out of 10 because they don't have a system. Because number one, as business owners, we don't prepare for these types of things. I see it all the time in my coaching, especially in my cleaning industry coaching. I see so many businesses that are bringing in good money, but their lack of system is causing them to waste money. It's causing them to lose clients. It's causing them to have refunds. Because why are you making $10,000 to $20,000 a month, but you don't have customer service, but you don't have somebody dedicated to handle people? It's just like, it goes back to the mindset of the entrepreneur. You don't deem it necessary, so you don't do it. And that's the problem. There are certain things in entrepreneurship. I don't care if you deem it necessary. It is necessary. You need to have somebody over your accounting. You need to have somebody over these things, because as a business owner, you have to come to the conclusion. And I had to come to this conclusion 3 years ago when I was in my cleaning business. Do I want to be the best cleaner, or do I want to be a great cleaning business owner? And we have to really get out of that mindset of, we did this to be to be a CEO. So if you're not going to do your due diligence, if you're not going to put the foundational work and the sweat equity, go get a job. Just do that. Yeah. Because you're going to be upset, frustrated. You're going to take it out on your customers. You're going to be like those people on social media that get one bad review or one bad person because they're mad, and then they want to go off on their customer. It's like, but this is your business. This is your model. They're not happy with it. So instead of complaining, why aren't you fixing it? So it's just like 100% around the board. You should always have your systems in place, because with systems comes ease. With systems comes scalability. And people forget that. You know, it's so easy to send somebody a link to the Calendly, have them, you know, fill out a questionnaire, do what they need to do, get on our schedule, versus me saying, hey, oh, you want this? Let me send you a Google form. Let me send you this. No, I don't have time for that. You're going to fall through the cracks. And then you're going to have anxiety. You know, a big thing with businesses and people have anxiety. They're like, I'm stressed. You're stressed because you don't know what's going on. Mm. You're stressed because you look at your calendar and you're like, there's nothing on my calendar, but I know I have something to do. So it's just, all of these systems are in place. It's not just systems in the business. It's your daily habits, your daily routines. It's everything that you do collectively. I think I came at Todd last week in the mastermind. He's like, I like to flow. And I'm like, you like to just be an organ. Like, no, that's not.
Flow off of the cliff.
Yes, I need you to flow into a schedule, flow into day theming or time blocking, and you'll see the dramatic change. For one thing that I do with my clients is I can take their 8-hour workday and break it down into 4 hours of productive, producing work time. You know, I just don't feel like if you don't want to have a 16-hour workday, don't. But be intentional about what you do with your time. If I'm trying to have a 4-hour workday so I can go do whatever else I need to do throughout the day, best believe I know what the delegation is. I know what the priority of task is because I prepare myself. And we just got to be more prepared. We got to be ready for what business ownership truly is. And I think people like you, like Charles, like myself, we're talking about the uncomfortable conversations in business. Nobody wants to talk about why they need a merchant processor when they get to a certain point. Nobody wants to talk about the foundation, the investing in your business. Nobody wants to talk about cybersecurity. Nobody wants to talk about any of these things.
They don't want to talk about it nowadays. Like he said, it's prevalent. Like you don't have a choice but to talk about it. It's not, cybersecurity is not a technology program, a problem anymore. It's a social problem, right? Like technology, I mean, they had into the oil pipelines. I mean, it's only a matter of time before people start messing with things like the lights, the stoplights, and the water, and
to even think that people could possibly have something to do with that is really ridiculous.
Right? No. So, it's becoming prevalent. Everything you do, you wake up and unlock your phone with cybersecurity, right? Like it's part of your everyday. It's not tech. It's the reason why some small businesses' hard drive gets hacked and they can't send out their payroll this week. But then that means somebody's not paying their son's school payment, right? Like it's not IT anymore. It's real life.
Forget that one hiccup, one problem can offset so many things. And prime example, one of my debit cards for my personal account got compromised. Somebody tried to put through like something, like all these things on Apple, on the Apple thing, were just like coming through on my card. And I was like, whoa, like I don't even have this card attached to my account. And so I had to shut my card down. Right. And I didn't even think, but everything, I have all my bills on auto pay. Everything got thrown off. I mean, I was getting calls out the butt. I was like, Michelle, your payment didn't go there. I'm like, what? Money is there, but I forgot. I forgot it was connected. I forgot that it was there. And I'm just like, now I'm late on all these bills. And I'm like, you don't really realize like how much you like, I love anything autopilot or system. I'm all for because I have a lot on my plate. So it's just like, you tend to forget these things and you move so fast paced, but that's why it's okay sometimes to slow down, to really monitor what you're doing, see what your business needs. Like, you know, do a business assessment, see what you like about your business and what you don't like, see what you want to do in your business and what you don't want to do. And from that point forward, that is how you learn to delegate. And that's how you learn what your task management is going to be. So for you, how do you balance HBCU? How do you balance cybersecurity? Like, because that just seems like it's a lot of mental heavy things like in one.
The systems, like you said, right? I'm real organized. Anything I research or look up or create, I won't do it twice, right? Like I make a lot of SOPs. Most people on my team, everybody's asked to make at least one a week, right? Like you should never be doing anything twice, right? And chances are if you're building a business, any task you're doing at the moment, either you or someone is gonna have to do it again. So being really technically savvy, I usually just create an SOP while I'm doing something for the first time ever.
I call that my business blueprint. I love that you said that because one thing that I do with my clients to make it easier for them is through our process, I put everything in a book, like a binder, and it's basically their blueprint, like your business model, everything that we talk about in your sessions, everything goes in this binder because it's like ultimately, and I got this idea because I wanted to take my cleaning business and duplicate it. I didn't want to franchise it. I just wanted to open up different pilots in different cities. So I was like, if I want to do that, I need to find a model that's going to work no matter where I put it. I'm going to be able to say, here, take this book, figure it out what I want you to do and just read it. Look at our policies, our HR, everything is in there. So I'm so happy you said that because that allows you to also be able to look at your foundation. You're able to see what you're missing, what you don't have, what you do have.
That's so funny you said it because for the last 6 months, I've been looking a lot more at hiring folks, right? Like operations, engineering, finance, just bringing people on in the CyberShield. And what started as, okay, here's a list of things I need help with, right? Like turned into this whole, here's the responsibilities for the requisitions that I need for everyone who will be doing anything. Mm-hmm. Right. And so to your point, as I started mapping out the SOPs I'll need to make for each person, I started to think about other things that other people did that needed to support that, right? And that just kind of slowly becomes, well, you don't even realize it, but you're actually mapping out the cohesion that'll have to exist between the different groups of people, right? A proper SOP from one group properly involves the other group, right? Because the idea is if I'm building it, I don't want to run it forever, right? And like I said, a lot of people don't do that. You got to evaluate what you're building. Are you building a startup that you want to make you a little bit of money right now? Do you want to work for your startup for 30 years? Do you want your startup to retire you in 12 years, right? And you got to work backwards. But for me, I want to retire from my startup. I don't want to be running it in 30 years, right? So them SOPs are needed. Because the things that I'm doing right now, I personally, as the business owner, probably should not be doing next March.
Yeah.
Right. So you got to have the processes and enabling and deploying the systems forces you to create the processes. Right. Because now you're paying for software and you're paying people to help you with that software. So what are they going to do? Right. You don't have a choice. Right. Excuse me. So. I think to answer the question, to keep it all together, people use lists. People use my team is organized. Let me say that. That's probably the easiest way to say it. Things are organized and run as efficiently as I, as a software developer, can make them. Right?
That's dope, and I can appreciate a good man that has organization. Because let me tell you. Y'all don't be having it together at all. I don't. That's why I'm like, I'm gonna give you your flowers because you've just said something so important. You know, you understand the value of having your foundation intact. You understand the value of building something that's sustainable, and you're all about wealth. So it only makes sense that you're gonna make sure that you're doing it the right way. So I commend you on that, because in a time period where people make everything that men do just weird, it's like, yeah, I'm organized, I'm efficient, I'm effective, I have my stuff together. Right. And you pour that into other people. So we definitely thank you for that, because without people like you that understand value is everything, pouring back into people is everything, because when you give, you get tenfold. And I'm such a firm believer in always adding value and always being visible and consistent.
It'll come back. It'll
always
come back.
And I think that's why you're going to do so well with everything that you're doing, because number one, you know who your target audience is, you know how to speak to them, you know what your brand voice is going to be. And I just think it's so important, that foundation, that's that key factor. You understand the organization, the development aspects. So, I mean, you have a recipe to win. That is just amazing.
Thank you. I mean, I try just try to be genuine, help folks and help them.
I think
them.
We should remove the try, because it's a natural thing. When you got, it's like what Nipsey said, when it's in you, it's on you. Like, it's not something that you can fake. You can't fake the funk when it comes to doing this life journey of.
I mean, I just like to say I'm just living and sharing my life in real time, right? Like, I probably would have been doing what I was doing if I couldn't have been sharing it on Instagram. It just so happens that we live in a time space where sharing with someone what you're doing every 10 minutes is cool, right?
So you turned your passion into profits. There we go.
T. Millie back in the Billy.
Oh, y'all didn't see me? I've been back.
No, I saw the message.
I had to get a little bit of something to eat real quick.
I know. Dope conversation though, Torrance. Really appreciate you and sharing your gems and what you got going on for the community. No, we love to y'all. See it. That's really dope, and pushing that narrative y'all. Forward.
I appreciate the conversation. It's good sometimes to step away from building and running meetings and just talk to people about what you're doing. So
that is why
appreciate the time. Appreciate the time. Definitely.
So yeah, man, where can people support what you have going on? Where can they find you? Where can they follow you?
I'm everywhere, B. TorrenceReed.com, right? That's TORRENCE.com. Toja Ventures, TOJAVENTURES.com. Because of course, all these things we built and started is ultimately had to become a venture studio of businesses that I'm trying to get funding for, right? And as I learn, I'm gonna teach and I'm gonna invest in other businesses. Right. And then just HBCUWallStreet.com.
Dope.
Love it.
Dope. Michelle, where can they find you? Where can they follow you? And where can they support what you have going on?
So you can find me on the Instagram at I am Michelle Welch or Prima Business Agency. And everything you need is in the bio. You can click that link and it'll take you to the website, to my courses, to past Millionaire Talk episodes. But yeah, definitely. And thank you again, Torrance, for coming on here and sharing all of your knowledge and love and energy. It's greatly appreciated.
Yeah, make sure you guys hit up this brother, because he's doing some really cool things, not just in the HBCU space, but in the technology and security space. And as we've mentioned, security is the utmost importance because so much of our lives is on the internet now, man. Everything's on the internet. So if you aren't protecting that, you're basically just like exposed, and they're going to get you because they got me. Them African
hackers, man. They're going to get everybody at some point.
Especially as your profile raises, as you become more influential, an image, those are the people they're going after, man. So yeah, another episode of Millionaire Talks. So my name is Charles Ogilvie with Michelle Welch. And we're going to continue to bring in this fire. So thank you guys all for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.